My title is, It All Started Over a Pig. And before I get to that, let me say that today's sermon is about holding grudges. For you kids who might be confused, a grudge is when another kid takes your cookie or toy, and so from then on you don't like him anymore. It's when a wrong is committed and the side offended will not forgive. Often it leads to counter grudges. Well, he doesn't like me. Well, I don't like him either. And then can escalate into much worse. When I was preparing about this, it brought to my mind one of the most famous grudges in the history of the United States, and that's the famous Hatfield-McCoy feud. These two families, the Hatfields and the McCoys, lived across the border from each other in West Virginia and Kentucky, and they had big families. And both these families were very similar. They prided themselves in their freedom, their skill with weapons, and a fierce sense of individualism. And I was going to get into the story with some depth, but as I was reading the details, I checked myself, hello, Family Sunday. So I'm going to keep the violence out of this, except to say that there was violence at the end of the feud, which lasted about 30 years. There were 13 people who died because of it. But it all started because of a pig. The head of the McCoy family, Randall McCoy, happened to be visiting one of his neighbors and relatives, actually, a Hatfield family. That's one of the things that makes this story really sad to me, is the participants in this feud were really all cousins. There really were two main families in this area, and they intermarried for years. So that made this particularly sad. Anyway, he noticed this head of the McCoy family, he noticed that there was a pig at this farm that looked really familiar to him. So much so that he decided that that was his pig. And he brought up charges against Floyd Hatfield for stealing his pig. The case was brought to court, the justice of the peace, and get this, the jury consisted of 6 Hatfields and 6 McCoys. The justice of the peace was a Hatfield who everyone considered fair because he was the Baptist preacher in the area. Randall McCoy lost the case due to the testimony of his nephew, who testified that the pig, that stupid pig, actually belonged to Floyd Hatfield. And that was the first event in this feud that would go on for so many years and claim so many lives and just cause really bitter, dangerous strife in these counties. They said they only listed 13 deaths in the family, but they kept talking about the government would send bounty hunters to the area to stop this and bring people back, and they don't know where the bounty hunters went. No one ever really found them. So that's how something really small can lead to something so bad. Today's Jungle Jam is called Lord of the Wrongs. And if you want to get closer, you can. Most of you are already pretty close. So you can come up if you want, but you don't have to. Jungle Jams are once again stories that I tell based on Jungle Jam and Friends, the radio show. I do the voices and where I look to tell you who the different characters are. I'm starting to run out of these, so either I'm going to have to write some more or get something new. We'll have to see. There's one thing in this story that's a little different that you need to know ahead of time, and that there's a character who in a previous Jungle Jam was a police officer, but he's not in this one, and they mention that, just so you know when you get there. Nozzles is the main character. He's about right there. We got Racket the Skunk over here. Sully the Aardvark is right about there. And Gruffy Bear, I'm in this one. He's over there. And the other character is like a Cole, sort of. So I'm not talking to you, Cole. But all right. 1 Corinthians 13, 4-5 says, Love is kind, not easily angered, and keeps no record of wrongs.
You mean we're better off forgiving and not holding grudges?
Exactly. You see, it all started one morning when Nozzles the elephant walked out of his cave and discovered,
Wow, it's windy today. We don't get wind like this in the jungle very often. I love the wind. It's like everything gets blown clean and we get a fresh start. Whew, she's really blowing.
Just then, Sully the Aardvark ran by. Whoa!
Hi, Sully.
Hey, Nozzles, come play with me in the wind. Look, I can put my coat over my head and it's like I can fly. Speaking of flying...
Hey, Racket.
It looks to me like a perfect day for a paper airplane flying contest.
Gruffy Bear hurried into Nozzle's yard at that point.
Hey, guys!
Look out, Gruffy, you're trampling on my beautiful new flowers.
Oh, sorry.
Those were beautiful.
Gruffy held a string and looked up at the sky.
Look at this. I made a new bark sky and I've been waiting all year to take her out for a spin.
Well, that does look fun.
I made some others, too. If anyone wants to join me.
I have an idea. I'm heading off to the new bookstore that just opened down the path. And as soon as I get back, we should all go down to the beach by the lake. We can play by sailboat, make paper airplanes, fly kites, and...
Whoa! Whoa!
Do that.
Sounds great.
We'll meet back here in about an hour.
See you then.
Whoa! Yeah, about an hour.
Nozzle sped off to the bookstore.
I gotta hurry. I'm no weatherman, but a wind like this can come and go like, well, the wind. There's the bookstore.
Huh? Boy, it's really blowing out there.
Yeah. Officer?
No, sir, I'm not an officer anymore. Couldn't take the stress or the boredom. I'm a wildebeest, and wildebeests have a tendency to worry and fall asleep.
What are you worried about?
Falling asleep. Where I come from, almost everything eats wildebeests. Lions, alligators, small birds. I'm basically a napping deli with feet.
Hmm.
Did you say, hmm, or hmm?
Oh, no, no, don't worry about me. I had a big breakfast. Should be okay for about an hour or so.
Huh? What? What? Boy, it's really blowing out there.
Yeah, that reminds me. I should hurry. I want to pick up a mystery.
Oh, you're in the right section. Help yourself.
Thanks. Let's see. The Case of the Missing Hat. Ooh, that sounds good. I read The Case of the Missing Overcoat. This must be the sequel. Here's an odd one. There's no type on the spine at all. Maybe it's a case of the vanishing title.
Nozzles picked it up.
There's no type in the inside either. Bet that makes it a quicker read.
A little trickier to figure out who did it, maybe.
Not that I'm not up to the task. Maybe it's empty so you can write in it.
He slid the book back on the shelf.
I wouldn't have the first idea what to put in a book like that. Let's see what else we have. The Tale of the Overcooked Hot Dog. Ooh, I'm going to slide that out a little bit so I can come back to it.
Nozzles picked up the blank book. Hey, Mr. Wildebeest?
Mr. Wildebeest?
Huh? Boy, why, it's really blowing out there. Hey, you're not hungry, are you?
No, I'll just take this book.
Most folks come in here, take one look at me, and go right for the cookbooks. Want a bag and a free pen?
Thanks.
Pay attention with the binding or the pages will fall out.
Will do.
Nozzles took his bag, licked his chops.
What?
Just kidding. And hurried out of the store.
I'm not laughing.
I don't want to miss out on playing in the wind. Oh, it's completely died. What a letdown. Well, that's it. I'm going back for that hot dog book.
Whoa! Whoa!
Hey, Sully, didn't you know the wind stopped?
What? Huh? Oh, I guess you're right. Guess I'll have to walk back home. Want to join me?
Actually, no. I was going to get a copy of The Tale of the Overcooked Hot Dog, but...
Captain Mustard in the Steamer with the Fondue Fork. I've read better.
I guess I can skip it now.
What's in the bag?
Something I'm hoping you haven't read. Actually, all the pages are blank.
I specifically hid that in the mystery section so I could come back when I had the money.
Yep, that's where I found it.
Well, what are you going to write in it?
I haven't the slightest idea. Captain Mustard in the Steamer with the Fondue Fork, he says. Maybe I'll write that in it.
When Nozzles got home, Gruffy Bear was opening the tool shed.
Oh, hi, Nozzles. I was wondering if I could borrow your ladder. You weren't home, so I was, borrowing your ladder.
Well, that certainly saves a step.
See, when the wind died, my box kite got stuck in a tree at Racket's house.
Well, help yourself to the ladder, like you are. Just don't forget to return it, maybe a few of the 9 or 10 other things you borrowed from me and never returned.
What are you talking about?
Oh, my rake, my hedger, my leaf blower.
Gruffy looked around the inside of the near-empty tool shed.
I was looking in here for that leaf blower yesterday. Should have checked my own tool shed first. Oh, well, note to self.
My wheelbarrow, my shovel...
The big shovel or the hand trowel? Never mind, I got them both.
I forgot about the hand trowel. You know what, we should write this down.
Nozzles reached into his bag.
It's not exactly why I bought it, but I suppose we could use a page of this.
He pulled out the book and pen and began writing.
My garden hose, my plant food sprayer.
You know, it's not like you've never borrowed anything from me and didn't return it.
Gruffy took the book and began writing on another page.
My crowbar, my hand drill, my metric wrench set.
Your metric wrench set?
Nozzles grabbed the book back from Gruffy.
My metric wrench set. And just now, Gruffy tried to steal my book.
Hey, that's not a hand tool.
Gruffy grabbed the book back from Nozzles.
Nozzles doesn't like to share. There, that's not a hand tool either.
Nozzles grabbed the book back from Gruffy.
Gruffy stomped on my flowers this morning.
Oh, that's true.
They went on like that for quite a while. Eventually, Nozzles' hand hurt from writing, and Gruffy couldn't think of anything else Nozzles had done to him.
Not that there aren't other things. I'm going to go home for lunch, but don't put that book away just yet, Elephant.
Trust me, you don't have to worry about that, Bear.
Later that day, Nozzles was writing at the table by his kitchen window.
Gruffy doesn't take turns very well at the swimming hole. You know, come to think of it, neither does Sully.
Just then Sully happened by.
What don't I do?
Take turns very well at the swimming hole. Come on in if you want, the door's open.
Sorry about the swimming hole, and quite honestly, you eat a lot.
Sully just said I eat a lot.
Hey, why are you writing that down?
Sully just asked why am I writing that down.
Yeah?
Oh, I'm keeping a list of all the things anyone has ever done wrong to me.
You know, come to think of it, Racket doesn't take turns at the swimming hole very well either.
Should we start a page for him?
Better make it a chapter. You can hear inside my mind, but it's like a dam just broke. Let me see that book.
There you go. I need to stretch my legs anyway.
Racket hogs all the pizza. I do not.
Hey, Racket. Didn't see you there.
I just walked by it, apparently in the nick of time. Door's open. Come in.
There's an extra chair in the den.
I do not hog all the pizza.
Or just take my chair.
I can't help it if you never buy enough.
Maybe I'll order a pizza. This talk is making me hungry.
Better get two pizzas. You know who is sitting right here. Do you honestly think that I don't know that you're talking about me? Well,
maybe I should order three pizzas. According to Sully, I eat a lot.
We should be talking about Gruffy.
Four pizzas, then?
He broke my favorite tree limbs trying to rescue his silly kite. Hang on, let me look. Well, Gruffy's section is full.
Although, I'd like to order five large pizzas.
We're going to have to start a new chapter.
Better make it six.
Make it a big chapter, that's all I can say.
I heard that!
Hey, Gruffy, the door's open.
Come on in.
There's an extra chair in the den.
Let me see that book. Talks about me behind my back.
Who does?
I'm putting that down for all of you.
Racket took the book from Gruffy.
Hey!
Don't worry, Gruffy. When the pizza comes, the book's all ours.
Later that day, the gang was still at it.
Nozzles acts like he's the boss of me.
Racket didn't give me my book when I asked him. Come to think of it, neither did Sully.
This went on for quite some time until...
That does it! I've had it! I'm not speaking to any of you! I'm way ahead of you, Aardvark. I haven't been speaking to any of you for the last 15 minutes. Oh, yeah? Well, who are you saying that to? La, 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 la.
Well, I'm certainly not speaking to anyone who's not speaking to me.
And I would never speak to anyone who's done... I've done 1, 2, 3, 4... 17 pages of things to me, and those are just the things I can think of at this moment. But don't put that book away just yet, Aardvark, skunk, and elephant.
None of the animals said another word. They scribbled in silence for a while until Sully reached for the book at the same time as Nozzles.
Too slow, Aardvark.
Sully got up and stormed off. Not to be outdone, Racket and Gruffy did too.
Finally, I can work on my lists in peace.
Then Sully came bursting back in.
Give me that book, elephant!
Sully just disturbed my peace.
I just thought of another thing.
Racket and Gruffy hurried in.
Me too!
I have 10 more things for each of you. Ouch!
Sorry.
That's 11 about you. Give me that book.
My hands are on it.
So are mine.
Gruffy yanked the book away and threw it out the kitchen window.
Hey!
They stared bitterly at each other for a moment. Then Gruffy bolted for the front door.
That's 12!
Nozzles, Racket, and Sully followed Gruffy outside.
The book is mine! Not if I get to it first.
It's mine no matter who gets to it first.
Gruffy and Nozzles each got a hand on the book, then Racket and Sully did too. They tried to wrestle it away.
Uh-oh.
The binding broke.
My book.
The animals tried to grab the pages as they fluttered up into the wind, swirling higher and higher, but they were quickly out of reach.
We didn't get one page. There goes the only record of everything Gruffy ever did wrong.
Me? You mean there goes the only record of everything Sully ever did wrong?
Me? What about Nozzles?
They watched as the pages floated up and up.
Maybe that isn't such a bad thing.
Until they were completely gone.
There goes the record of everything we ever did wrong.
Okay, maybe we can all be friends again.
Okay.
I love the wind.
It's the best.
It's like everything gets blown clean.
And we get a fresh start.
Anybody up for a sailboat ride?
You bet. I'll bring my box kites.
We can have a paper airplane flying contest.
That day. I'm sorry I acted so badly, everyone.
The animals learned a lesson.
Yeah, we're sorry, too.
About the importance of forgiveness.
Whoa, me too, sorry!
And how love doesn't keep a record of wrongs.
And if it does, it's in a poorly bound book that can easily blow away in the wind.
That's beautiful, Racket. Just beautiful.
That's the end of that. Now, if you look in the, starting off in the Old Testament, it goes from grudge to grudge to grudge. Cain held a grudge against Abel and killed him. Lamech bragged about holding grudges. Sarah held a grudge against Hagar and forced her out of the house. Esau held a grudge against Jacob for stealing his birthright and plotted to kill Jacob after their father's death. Joseph's brothers held a grudge against him because their father Jacob favored Joseph with a coat of many colors, so they sold him into slavery. The wife of Potiphar held a grudge against Joseph for spurning her advances, and we could go on. Grudges are a symptom of us being human and sinful. Have you ever met someone who seems to keep personal track of everything someone has ever done to them? After a while, it just seems to poison them, and they could use a cleansing wind of that would blow everything away. And there is such a thing. It's called true forgiveness. If you'd open your Bibles to Matthew 18, it's a familiar passage to many of us. It doesn't start off with forgiveness, but we'll get there. Matthew 18, 15 through 17. If your brother sins against you, go and show him his fault just between the two of you. If he listens to you, you've won your brother over. But if he will not listen, take one or two others along, so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, treat him as you would a pagan or a tax collector. Like I said, we'll get to more of this chapter in a bit, but let's stop there for now. This is the classic how to resolve conflicts passage from the Bible. And how does this passage make you feel? That's how it makes me feel. I cringe. That first line, if your brother sins against you, go and show him his fault just between the two of you. What, are you kidding me? Wouldn't it be better just let it lie, you know? But you see, I've done that. I've let it lie. Then something else happens, and I'll let that lie. And then something else, and something else. Until it gets to the point when that person would come around, nothing would have been said between us, but there'd be this thing between us. Until the eventual confrontation is so full of pressure and history that it was way bigger than it needed to be. My inclination, my personal inclination, is to avoid all conflict like the plague. We're called to be a peaceful people. We're not supposed to fight. The problem is when we mistake simple correction for conflict and avoid it. Peace is not doing nothing. It's a double negative, but I think you know what I'm getting at. It has to be worked at, constantly adjusted and cultured. And in the end, no matter what happens, we're called to forgive each other as many times as it takes. The passage goes on, then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother when he sins against me? Up to seven times? And Jesus answered, I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times. Which really meant as you're always supposed to forgive. And Jesus explains why with a little story about a king and a servant. The servant owed the king an astronomical amount, the equivalent of billions of dollars, one source told me. The king was going to sell the man and his family as slaves, which wouldn't have paid the debt off, but he took pity on the man when he begged for mercy. The servant asked for time to pay it back. And the king knew that paying the debt back was impossible. No amount of time would have helped. So he simply forgave the debt and set the man free. The servant then went to another servant who owed him a relatively small amount, and he choked him and demanded to be paid. The servant begged him for mercy using the same language that he had used with the king, but he had him thrown into prison until he could pay him back. And the king heard of it, and you can listen to his response here. Then the master called the servant in and said, "You wicked servant, I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you?" In anger, his master turned him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed. "This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother from your heart." We are the servant who was forgiven the debt we could never pay. We can never pay the penalty for our own sin. So when God forgave it, he canceled it. So when someone else offends us and we don't forgive, we're throwing our ungratefulness right back into the face of God. Whether those who offend us ask for it or not, we need to forgive. Let's look at the process once again. There are two responsibilities as I see it. There's the responsibility of the offended and the responsibility of the offender. And the responsibility of the offended, someone offends you. Verse 15 says, go to him and talk about it. Just the two of you. In many cases, my guess is they don't even know what they did wrong. And hopefully, the process ends there. I think if I had done this in some situations in my life, I would have had a much easier time of it. If I had gone right at the beginning and cleared things up, it wouldn't have gotten as bad. But then if you don't win over your brother, as it says then go get two or three others. And I don't think this is meant to gang up on them. I think it's more of a check on you. Those two or three may look at the problem and tell you, you know what, you might be overreacting a little bit. Or they may have better ideas of how to resolve it. And then you go back to the person, and then they serve as witnesses so they know, they hear what's said, there's a record of what's going on. But then if he still doesn't listen, you're supposed to involve the whole church. And the final step, the last thing, is to treat him as a pagan and a tax collector, is what it says. At first glance, and by the way, that's the final thing. That's after going through everything else. I think sometimes we jump to the pagan and tax collector a little quick. We skip a couple steps. And that's the temptation. But at first glance, that makes it seem like you're to have nothing to do with that person. The Jews avoided pagans and tax collectors. But if you remember, Jesus did not. I think it means that we are to treat those people as unbelievers. It does not remove the love we're supposed to show them. It does not take away our responsibility to pray for them. Now the responsibility of the offender, the person who did wrong. First off, if you know that you offended somebody, you need to go and ask forgiveness. But often it seems that this process breaks down because the person who is the offender takes offense at the person coming to them and will not agree that they did anything wrong. I think the main response of the person being accused of being wrong is to keep a cool head and listen. Communicate. If you need to say, okay, can I think about this a couple days and I'll get back to you. Don't get defensive, but work together to resolve the issue. And then it'll never get past that first step. In closing, I want to relate a little story I heard about a Baptist minister who went to visit a Mennonite church. We're part of the Conservative Mennonite Conference. He had heard that they're big into peace, and he wanted to hear more about it. Well, it just happened that the day that he went was the day that a huge conflict erupted, and a large group up and left that church. He went away, and if I remember correctly what he said, what he said after that, it was, "What good is their peace? Instead of talking it out until one side gives in and they stay together, they just leave, making both sides the weaker for it." I think that's something we need to remember. And let's try not to be afraid to go to each other when we feel we've been wronged right away. Because grudges are nasty, they're harmful, they're vicious, and they leave marks down the road. And our unforgiveness for each other separates us from and angers God. I found a quote from a young girl. She said to her father, "You know, Daddy, holding a grudge is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. It's just that pointless. Please pray with me. Lord, some of us know that we've been holding something against someone else. And I pray that you would look into those situations and help us to have the courage to make it right. Give us the wisdom to know what we should do in those situations. Some other of us know that we've offended someone else, and they may be holding it against us. And those instances, once again, I ask for courage to go and make it right, to ask for forgiveness. I pray that as a body, as Christians, we would have that peace, but that we would guard it, that we would not just let it happen, but be active in reconciling each other, being a body, and all that means, and working together well. Lord, thank you for forgiving our debt, our sin that we could never repay. Thank you for doing it for us and canceling it. And help us to remember that we need to forgive. We have a responsibility to forgive because we've been forgiven. In your name.